Chapter 56. One day. One day to avoid a fate far, far worse than death. One day in a padded suit, strapped to a padded chair, in a padded room. Look for the flaws in the system. Any flaw, no matter what. Chair bolted to the floor. IV drip feeding me the nutrients I would naturally refuse to take. Padded door. Guards outside. They were the weakest link. Vincent, in refusing to participate in what would happen next, had left the process open and exposed to manipulation. I had no doubt that he'd ordered the guards not to speak to me. But sometimes, even an under-rewarded soldier of the USSR has to take the initiative. I tugged and writhed against the needle in my hand until at last I managed to pull it free, lacerating the skin across the top of my hand in a great jagged red stripe. I didn't call out, didn't say anything, but let the blood run in great crimson stains over the white padded floor, infusing the cloth with glorious technicolor. The strap across my skull made it impossible for my head to hang, but I closed my eyes and waited with what I hoped was my greatest faraway look. It took the guards shamefully long to check on me and see the blood still dribbling down the chair. They burst in at once, and then an embarrassing conversation took place as to what they should do and whether to get help. "Is he unconscious?" asked one. "How much blood has he lost?" The elder, and I hoped the senior, inspected my hand. "It's a surface wound," he exclaimed. "He's pulled out the needle." I opened my eyes and was satisfied to see the man jump back in alarm. "Gentlemen," I said. "I imagine you are under orders not to communicate with me, so let me be blunt and to the purpose. I know you all. I know your names, your ranks, your histories, and your homes. I know that you, Private, still live with your mother, and you, Sergeant, have a wife in Moscow, who you haven't seen for 3.5 years, and a daughter whose photo you proudly carry in your pocket and show to all in the canteen every dinner break without fail. She is my diamond, you explain. She is my wealth. I have a question for you, just one question, and it's this. Do they know nothing? Absolutely nothing about what you do. It's very important you think about this, very important you consider every aspect of every conversation you've ever had with them. For if they know anything, anything at all, which could compromise this facility, then of course, gentlemen, they will be next. Your wife, your mother, your daughter. They cannot know a thing, not even a whisper. That's all I wished to say. And now, if you wouldn't mind applying a plaster to my hand, I'll get on with the business of awaiting my torture and inevitable execution. Thank you." They left in a hurry and didn't bring me a plaster. It may have been 20 hours later, it may have been 2, and Vincent was back. The sergeant from before stood in the doorway as he talked, watching me nervously over his employer's shoulder. "Have you considered?" Vincent asked urgently. "Have you decided?" "Of course I have," I replied lightly. "You're going to torture me, and I'm going to tell you an endless series of whatever it is I think you want to hear to make you stop."
"Harry!"
Urgency, desperate and low in his voice.
"It doesn't have to be this way. Tell me your point of origin, and no harm will come to you, I swear."
"Have you considered the point of no return? That moment when the damage you've done to my body is so great that I no longer care, nor consider it worth my while to say anything at all? You must be hoping that you won't reach that moment before you break my mind." He leaned back, face hardening at my words.
"This is your doing, Harry. This is something you're doing to yourself."
So saying, he left me. The sergeant stayed in the door, and for a moment, our eyes locked. "Nothing at all?" I asked, as the door swung shut. They began only a few minutes later. To my surprise, they opened with chemicals, and a twist on the usual theme of the same, a partial paralytic, locking my diaphragm in place, so I choked and suffocated, the air turning to lead in my lungs, blood and head. Some movement was still possible, the dose cleverly judged, so for an hour, maybe more, maybe less, I sat gasping and gaping for air, the sweat running down my face and spine, vision on the edge of darkness, but not quite going over.
Vincent had hired a professional. A small man with a neat moustache, he had his tools laid out, always for my scrutiny, on a tray before him, and, like an athlete in training, gave some time for rest between each new application of pain. At the end of every rest, he asked the question, "What is your point of origin?" and waited patiently for me to reply, shaking his head sadly when I refused to do so. Next up was physical nausea, causing cries not so much of pain, but of an animal trapped in its own carcass, of heat upon heat upon heat, of a twisting, a shrinking, a narrowing of the senses, until all I could perceive was my own hideously sane delirium. And there was the sergeant in the door, watching, always watching. And when the torturer took a break to get himself a glass of water, the sergeant came in and took my pulse, looked into the pupils of my eyes and whispered, "She knows I took the train to Plosky Prudy, the end of the line. Is that too much?" I just smiled at him and let him answer the question for himself. Somewhere between the sickness and the suffocation, Vincent came in and held my hand. "I'm sorry, Harry," he said. "I'm sorry." I tried to spit at him, but my mouth was dry, and he left again. They brought in the car battery long before, I think, they intended to use it. It was merely another object of interest, a thing to be placed on display. Sleep deprivation and extreme heat, a variation on the method I had expected, were the first order of the day. Someone with a highly creative appreciation of the use of surround sound and an ear for the unholy had created a soundtrack which oscillated between techno beats, tortured screams, and graphic descriptions of violent and violating acts, carried on with Foley effects and in several different languages. If there was any danger that the noise and horror of all this was making me numb, a little too close to sleep, the guards came in and shook me awake, throwing ice water in my face, horror against the heat. "You're a good man," I told the sergeant when he woke me again. "You know what's right." "Drink, Harry, drink," Vincent's voice, a whisper in the sudden quiet. I knew he put a damp cloth to my lips, and I drank greedily until my mind crawled back to awareness, and I spat the liquid out, spilling it down my chin and front. A thin concoction, two parts saliva to one part water. The torturer's moustache was especially fine the day he pulled my toenails out. I imagined him sleeping at night with a net across his face to give it such excellent buoyancy. "You're a good man," I told the sergeant, as he folded up the plastic sheet from beneath my feet, containing its cocktail of torn nail and black blood. "How long until it's you?" He looked over his shoulder to make sure the torturer was outside, taking one of his many rest breaks to stretch his fingers out after his work, then leaned in close. "I can get you poison," he whispered. He looked. "That's all I can do." "That's enough," I replied. "That's all anyone can do." The poison was rat poison, but rats and humans share more than a few passing genetic traits. It was enough. The torturer, ironically, didn't realize what my symptoms entailed until my kidneys were well into failure. Even I could perceive the spreading yellowness in my skin was no reaction to having the little bones in my feet crushed one at a time in a vice. I howled with laughter when the torturer realized, shaking in my chair, stained tears rolling down my cheeks at the revelation. "You idiot," I shrieked. "You incompetent! You total ass!" They unstrapped me from the chair, and the torturer stuck two fingers down my throat to induce vomiting far, far too late. That was how Vincent found me, on the floor, shaking with laughter in my own blood-flecked puke. The old sergeant stood stiff and steady in the door. Vincent turned from me to the torturer, to the sergeant, and in that instant knew precisely what had happened and how. Anger flickered across his face, and he turned back to me. I laughed the harder to see the look in his eye, but to my surprise, Vincent didn't lash out at the sergeant, didn't condemn the torturer, but gestured to two orderlies and barked, "Get him to the infirmary!" They got me to the infirmary. They even gave me painkillers. The doctor stared at the floor as she delivered her diagnosis, and my laughter, rather diminished by the loss of hormonal stimulation from my system, was only a smile for Vincent when he came to my bedside. "That was very quick," he said at last. "I didn't expect you to contrive a means of death for at least 5 days."
"It's been less than 5 days."
2.5.
"Good God." "Then, the sergeant's a good man. He didn't like what you're doing. If you shoot him, can you apologize to him first? On my behalf, that is."
Vincent scowled, flicking through my medical chart in the vain hope of finding some indication that I wasn't, in fact, already a long way past saving. I had finished puking, finished shaking and burning. The doctors had got to me in time to prevent cardiac failure, but my kidneys were lost, and my liver would follow soon. And that was enough. I didn't even need to look at a chart to know it was so.
"He'll be moved to another unit," replied Vincent calmly. "I am not in the business of unnecessary death."
I nearly laughed again, but breathing was on the way out, so I only managed to grunt.
"It's obvious now that I won't get what I want, so of course we'll aim to make your death as comfortable as possible. Is there anything I can bring you?"
"Wouldn't say no to more morphine."
"Alas, I believe you're already at your maximum allowance."
"What's the harm now?"
His lips twitched, eyes dancing away. My heart jumped a beat. What more? What more could possibly be done to me in the little time I had left?
"Vincent," I murmured, voice slipping low with warning, questioning. "What are you going to do?"
"I am sorry, Harry."
"So you keep saying, and I'm sure every toenail I left behind is grateful for your pity. What are you planning?"
He didn't meet my eye as he said,
"I need you to forget."
I was so briefly stunned, I didn't know what to say. He half shook his head, and for a moment I wondered if he was going to apologize again. The temptation to try and punch him if he did flickered briefly at the back of my mind, not that I could have possibly landed a blow. Instead, he just walked away and refused to look back, even when I started screaming again. They kept me tranquilized for most of my demise, which was a relief. It kept both the pain and the thoughts of what was next subdued. I know I dreamed, but for almost the first time, did not remember my dreams, only that they were fast and hot, reality intruding into the stories of my mind as a prickling on my skin that became the claws of insects, a burning in my stomach that became the carrying of my own guts in a shopping bag, the bleeding in my feet, which was simply explained by my wandering mind as the slow swallowing of my body whole by a great snake whose body rippled like a harmonic wave with each new gulp of my flesh. By the time its fangs reached my midriff, my feet were already well into the snake's belly, dissolving a bone at a time in the slow, pulsing acid. They cut things fine. I was on pure oxygen, and my stats still falling by the time they were ready for me. They wheeled in a new device, patched together from who knew what dregs of a mad scientist's mind. It needed its own power supply. A mere 230 volts were not enough for this baby. There was some bickering about whether the trolley I lay on should be earthed or not, before one doctor with a great bark of, "You're such children!" pointed out that the metal handcuffs which strapped me to its sides would do a perfectly decent task of channeling any current, and that everyone was to treat this procedure as being equivalent to a cardiopulmonary resuscitation, and be it on their own head if they got stung. I believe I kicked and screamed and begged and fought, but in truth, I was probably too tired and too dosed to make more than grunting noises, punctuated by the occasional childlike shriek of indignation. They had to use masking tape to attach the electrodes to my skull. Getting me to keep the final electrode in my mouth proved more of a challenge, until the same doctor who had demonstrated such a sensible attitude to voltage reached the equally sensible decision to administer a paralytic. Sedation, it was judged, would probably not help what they were aiming to achieve, but I was grateful when one of the orderlies leaned over and taped my frozen, bone-dry eyes shut. All I was left with was sound. It took them 3 false starts to get it right.
the first charge misfiring as a fuse blew, the second failing to trigger because one of the leads had become detached in the attempt to change the fuse. When they finally got round to the business of sending a few thousand volts through my brain in an attempt to wipe every aspect of who and what I was from my still-thinking mind, it had a slight air of comedic afterthought. I heard the doctor say, "Can we please get it right this time? Is everyone standing clear? All right, and..." And that was that.